Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Well, we want you to know that we have a new host, and that's Mary Pero. And Robin is still with us, just she's not with us today. But Mary's going to be joining us a lot, and I'm so excited that Mary's like now on board with Women Worth Knowing. And we had a meeting yesterday, and boy, she's got the vision. She's got the vision just like Robin and I, and she's got the passion. So we're really excited about welcoming Mary, and you probably heard her when we did the podcast on Maud Kells, and Mary joined me in studio for all four episodes. But this is something different for you, Mary. Today, we have a live guest. And so this is your first time being able to host with a live guest.
I'm so excited about our guest today. I think her story is incredible. I've just gotten a little tidbit. I'm excited to be here and just to hear what she has to share with us. So I'll let you go on to the introduction, but I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I got to interview Jeannie before, and I remember sitting across from her. We were doing an internet live show, and just sitting across from her, just like, holding back the tears.
Wow.
Because, Jeannie, I love the anointing on your life. I love your spirit. I think I love everything about you. I even like your husband. I just think you guys are like the dynamic duo. So one day, I'm just praying, about guests, and it's like, have Jeannie Ouellette. I'm like, of course. Why haven't we had her before? But, God's timing is perfect. So, Jeannie, welcome to Women Worth Knowing. I'm so excited.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel so honored to be here. And one of the things I love is that Cheryl is totally a mentor of mine. I just love, her inspiration and what she's done. And I'm always excited to hear different things from her. So I'm just really happy to be here and be able to talk about something that's on my heart. I know what Cheryl was referring to before, actually, when I had spoke to her, had to do with special needs. So that's really what a lot of this is going to be about, is special needs.
And I can't wait to get into that, because if you're a listener and you've got a special needs child, or you know someone with a special needs child, they need to hear this episode. So let me just start with a story about Jeannie, and just this is another reason why I love her. She does a special needs ministry at our church right now, which is called Limitless, and it's just amazing. So one day I had a little boy who was severely autistic, and he was just so disruptive in the class, like major disruptive. And we only have two teachers in each Sunday school class. And so when there's a disruption like that, you're not allowed to leave the kids alone with any teacher. There always has to be at least two in the classroom. And there was no one there. And he refused to walk back into the classroom with the rest of the kids. And neither of us are allowed to leave our class. As the Lord would have it, one of the Sunday school directors happened to walk by right then. Again, she can't be alone with the child either. So she had to call security. So now there's security in this child. Well, this just makes them more upset. So we come into the classroom, and this little boy began to bang on the windows, bang on the door, because he's scared. Mm-hmm. And everything is frightening. And yet we can't open the door, and the kids are scared in class. And he just doesn't know how to control himself. He just doesn't know. And so my friend who's head of the Sunday school, she comes in and she said, we've got him in the office. You're going to have to tell his mom and bring her in. And it has to be you. And so I said, okay. So she comes and I said, your son's not here. Mm. And she had this look. And I said, but you kind of were concerned about that already. And she shakes her head. Yes, I was. And I said, I want you to know, first of all, we love you. Mm. And we don't have anything against you. We want to help you in whatever way. And I get to the office. I don't know how we're going to help this woman. And there's Jeannie, and she's playing with this little boy. And she's got him fully engaged.
Oh.
And he has calmed down. And he's like a dream child. You would never know there was any altercation at all. And I was kind of talking to the mom. She's pouring out her heart, and her struggle had been, it was incredible. It was the persecution that she had undergone mm-hmm. because of her son, and from outside sources and at another church. It was tremendous. And so she's like, I don't know what to do. I've already spent all this money. Nothing's worked. And about that time, Jeannie walks in and she begins, like a ministering angel, sorry, Jeannie, to do this to you, to talk to this mom and say, I know your struggle. I understand. Mm. And this is, I'm going to walk through this with you and I'm going to help you. And I want you here at church on Sunday and I'll take your son. I've got this special needs ministry. I'll work with him. Ugh. And I'll do whatever it takes. And I see her. I just saw her like two Sundays ago. And she's there and she's found a home and she knows now that was like a year or 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Yeah.
And she knows she's loved and she knows she's understood. And it just makes such a huge difference. So,
oh, it totally does. I think it's so important and so meaningful to feel seen and loved, whether you're the little boy who's feeling very hurt or afraid or misunderstood, or the mom who's frustrated not only for her child, but also for the ways that she's not been seen and not understood.
Honestly, that's one of many stories. There's just numerous stories of families that come to me and say that they've have been to churches and they've just have not felt wanted. They've said, we have no place for your child. So to them, that means no place for them.
Of course.
And that story that Cheryl just told, That was God intervening, because he was a difficult boy, I'll be honest. But we just have such loving, amazing people that work under me, the volunteers that are just, they just wrap their arms around the children. And I just knew that was, I was really want to invest myself in the mom also, because I felt like she just was so defeated. I mean, she was getting calls at school saying, come get your child. You know, he's being disruptive. Most of the time, it's just the school's not really understanding, their journey. It's just that here's the child. It's not really what the parent's going through. I know the thing for me is I do walk in these shoes because I have a special needs daughter. Mm-hmm. So I've lived this life. I've felt, you know, pretty much what these parents have felt. And it just, the biggest thing for me, I think, that people don't realize is there's probably, I would say, 85% of the parents that we serve are single parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, moms, dads, and to walk alone in that journey,
yes,
is very difficult. So, you know, I just was determined to have the church wrap their arms around them.
You know, I love that so much, and that's what I've seen. But, you know, I want to launch into how you got to where you are now. And so let's just start with growing up. And then, you know, we'll talk about how you got into the ministry. And then I want to talk maybe second, because I know there's going to be at least two of these shows. But the second show, I really want to talk about the stories and these children and what this ministry entails and how the Lord has, you know, equipped you for this. But let's talk about your story first.
Okay, my story. So I grew up in a home that actually was not a home where there was any Christianity. It was a kind of a very dysfunctional family. I had an Italian father that loved to drink, and I had the mother that was always cooking or just not really with the kids so much. There was a lot of spiritual warfare going on in the home, and At that time, I must have been really sensitive to that. Now I know that it has something to do with sermon. I always felt a sense of God. I even prayed to God, just not even really knowing, you know. I just knew that I wanted that that peace and that comfort, because I was scared a lot of times. I did find out later on part of the spiritual warfare came from someone in the family that was dealing in the magic arts or the black arts. So that was in the house. And then I just, for me, like, just, you know, I was a typical California teenager. I surfed and I did all, you know, the fun things.
And she still has her beautiful long blonde hair.
Yes.
True Californian.
That I can't get rid of. I hold on to that. Even if I get older, I'm like, no. Yeah. So I, you know, for me, I just really never had a role model, you know, that kind of just spoke about Jesus to me or anything to me. Not that my mom at one point was a Catholic, so I got that from her. My dad, like I said, he was just a hard nut. He was a hard nut to crack. He was just one of those Italian men. And so I just remember when I was about 15 years old, I went to a Christian concert with a friend that invited me. And that just affected me so much. I was just like, that was just kind of a moment for me. I was like, wow, this is just amazing. It was just like, I felt so wonderful. However, it took me about until I was almost 19 to really accept Jesus. I was kind of a rebel, and I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I know that I heard the word, but I'm just going to go ahead and live in the in-between. I'm going to live like my life the way I kind of wanted.
That is so typical of teenagers, yeah. Christian and non-Christian. I mean, I'm dealing with one of those, a grandchild, but it is. And I know I went through that same struggle, and my struggle, you know, I loved Jesus. I believed in him, but it was like, I think my will's better than your will.
Right.
You know, and it was just little things, but it's still, oh, it's so frustrating.
It was, and that's so true. And it was, I did have a sense of God. And I honestly, I wasn't using foul language. That always bothered me. I wasn't running with the wrong crowd. I mean, I had friends that wanted to drink and do all the other stuff. And I always felt like a conviction. I always felt like, oh, I can't do that. But so I started going to a church, and then on a Sunday morning, it was Easter morning, because it's just this to me, Easter is just such a, it's special anyways, but this is just so meaningful for me. I just remember the altar call, the Easter altar call, and I just felt like I was floating off my feet, and just somehow I got to the altar. I don't even know how I got there, but I actually felt like I floated there. And that was when I actually gave my heart to Jesus, and I it still chokes me up. I still get emotional over it. And it just, from that time on, I remember I was only at the church for a very small amount of time, and somebody said, would you like to work in the children's ministry? I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, you know, I could probably do that. And then I just fell in love with working in the children's ministry. I know Cheryl can contest to this. There's something about working with children. I don't know, they're just so special to me. And so I remember them giving me a class. I was like 19. And there was a little boy that I didn't know much about special needs at the time, but I knew there was something that was not right about him. And his mom, she just looked so tired, and she just said, oh, you know, I know nobody really wants him in their class. And I said, well, I'll take him, and he can sit next to me, be my helper. And he just was so good. I mean, now I know he had autism, which I didn't know much about at all. And so I remember her telling me at the end of like a month, she said, you know, you welcomed my son where nobody welcomed my son. You know, you talked about Jesus to my son. And she said, there is a change in him. So I felt like, okay, Lord, wow, you know, this is something, I don't know much about special needs kids. I have no idea, but I mean, at that time, really nobody really knew. I mean, churches, they just like, they would say, your child's bad, or, you know, there's a behavioral issue. Come get him.
Yeah, there definitely wasn't as much information.
Right. Or the parents, you're not disciplining like you should be. And, you know, everybody had written parenting books.
Right.
So you figured, oh, I've got the wrong parenting book.
That was it. And the thing that always makes me laugh to this day, they say, I was always that number that flashed in the sanctuary. I don't know if you guys remember the numbers.
Yes.
My number was always flashing in the sanctuary. And I thought, oh, you know, to me, that was so heartbreaking.
Okay. So just for people who don't know, because it took me a second to pick up on that, what you're referencing is when you have a child in children's ministry, if there's a problem or they need to call you out, then the number that you were given when you dropped off your child. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So you were always sitting in church, and I can even feel that, like, just your cheeks burning. No one knows whose number that is, but you do.
Right.
And it's always your number.
Right.
And just that pressure maybe to
or you kind of want to ignore it. Like, okay, that's not my number.
Yeah, something but, else you know, going on right. and that pressure. Yeah.
And it's so in those days, you know, it wasn't just special needs kids. It was like the behavior, you know, they say the behavioral child, you know, come get your behavioral child. And for me, like no child, I never use the word bad. That was one word I even tell the volunteers in my class, please don't ever say that a child's bad, because I think that's, it sets something in that child. It keeps that in their mind. It's like a sticky thought that they cannot get rid of.
Yep.
And then they carry it with them, you know? And so I just said, please don't say that. So when I was teaching this little boy, I just felt really happy about that. And then I, over there, it was a very small church. And I said, we need something where we can have a room for these children, you know? And they were kind enough to put a little tiny room. We had a few children with special needs. I actually said, though, I don't think the room should be painted red.
Oh, I agree.
Maybe not.
Which it was painted red. And I said, I think we need to get this red out of here.
Now, are you still, are you about 19 at this time?
I'm 19 at this time.
So at a very young age, almost at the beginning of receiving the Lord, you just have this kind of calling on your life. And I love the way that you're talking about it. Because at that time, you didn't have your own family and your own experiences. Right. Like you're saying, you really didn't know much about children with special needs. Most people didn't know, but there was something
drawing
you. Yeah. And then even for you to have at 19 the unction to say, you know, I don't think this room should be red. I feel like that's quite bold for a 19-year-old.
And like you said, the discernment, right? There's something.
I think that this room is going to trigger a few kids here, and they kind of like laughed. Well, you know, I actually have to kind of go back a little bit too. So when I was 13, this is because you had just said the Lord kind of setting me up. At that time I didn't realize it. I babysat two little girls with Down syndrome. Nobody in the neighborhood wanted to babysit them. Mm. And so I said, I'll babysit them. And I mean, they just were so cute and funny. I mean, they brought like joy to me. Like I just got so, I mean, I got so much from them. I just thought, wow, these guys are really, you know, just fun to be around, you know? And everybody's like, oh gosh, are you sure? Because, you know, the one little girl was a little bit of a little aggressive, but that was kind of my start. And I'm like, okay, that's great. And then I remember watching on TV, I'm sure you guys watch those commercials where there's those sad children that they want to give money to because they, you know, even when I was younger, I couldn't watch it without crying. Like, I was like, oh, you know, that's so sad. And I always was drawn to the persecuted church. There was just something about all that. And so I said, Lord, I don't know what my journey is. I don't know what you have for me. But at 19, I mean, I was just saved. So I said, I don't know what's going on here. You know, I said, I just have to trust you and like let you just guide me through that. And then flash forward a little further into this, I was married, and
okay. Wait, how did you meet your husband? this story.
This is kind of a journey. I don't think a lot of people, maybe at church, even know this. So I actually met my first boyfriend at 16. It's not my husband, and he was older than I was, and I married him. And this was before I was a new Christian. It was an unequally yoked marriage. Mm-hmm. I could talk about that. And I had a baby. And at that point, my husband at that time, he just did not want anything to do with Christianity. So he walked away, and I had a 3-month-old baby. So it was me and my 3-month-old son. Mm. And I said, wow, you know, I just remember having conversations with God and just saying, you know what? I don't even know what I'm doing. You know, what, you know, help me, help.
So you know what it's like to be a single parent.
I totally know what it's like.
Wow, how you were prepared by God. I mean, God's got a whole different college.
Exactly.
He really does. Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, obviously, you never think in your mind you're going to be in that situation. But, you know, I won't say it's easy because it was very difficult. But I did see God's hands in a lot of the situations that I walked through with my son. So when I want to say my son was close to 2, and I was at a church, and I was going to be in a wedding, and I'm like, these are good friends, and we're going to pair you up with somebody.
Oh, the worst.
Yeah, it was those times when we're going to pair you up with the opposite sex, you know, a male. I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want another man in my life. I have my son. That's all I need. So needless to say, he paired me up with my husband now, Derek.
So it didn't turn out so bad.
No. I mean, I thought, wow, this is a really, like, you handsome man. I thought, okay. And, but it took a while for the friendship to unfold. And he was just really kind and gentle. And
yes.
He was just the father figure to my son that I just was dreaming of. And so we did marry, and we've been married like 38 years. So that was quite a long time ago. Just like anybody else, it's not easy. And the reason I'm saying not easy, because it's, you know, the first 10 years, I think you're going through like a really adjustment period, like a
Amen.
Real adjustment period.
Amen.
Yeah. And his story is another story, because his story actually is quite remarkable. It's actually, and you know, I can talk about that too. It's just, he had some health issues, and I don't think he'll mind me saying this. He had a stroke at a very young age, and I found him on the floor.
Wow.
And he literally died.
Wow.
And
oh my.
When he came back, it was like a different person. I was just like, this is a different person. But the person that came back was even more amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This person was just so grateful to God. And, you know, it was just a different person. You know, going backwards a little bit. So with my son and him, I got married, and then we have our middle daughter. We had our middle daughter, and she's very bright. My middle daughter, she's an author. I know I spoke to Cheryl about this. She's just really very intelligent. She wrote a book, and she's writing another book, and she just loves writing. And I'm not even sure what I'm trying to think of years. So like around 1992, actually 91, I found out I was going to have a child. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm quite a bit older and I'm going to have another baby. That was very scary to me. And lo and behold, my third daughter, she ended up having special needs. And it was, I honestly did not know anything again about special needs. I mean, here I have a child and I was walking with other people with special needs and I was like, okay.
You learn in a different way.
I learned
when it's your own experience.
Can I ask you like what the telltale signs were? Because, you know, a lot of people, they're thinking, oh, my baby's not nursing well, or my baby's not looking me in the eye. And I was wondering, what were the telltale signs? And we've only got about 2 minutes, but I want to get this in there.
So the signs usually, at the time, you know, I just knew because I had two other kids. I feel like that was kind of a telltale sign for me. She wasn't doing all of the milestones. The biggest thing was when she turned two, she was just nonverbal. She just mm-hmm. did not speak. I mean, she was not speaking. And I just knew there was a lot of little signs there. Usually if your child's not speaking, that's a key factor. And there's mm-hmm. something, you know, definitely going on. And not looking you in the eye, kind of, you know, not, you know, just, and then a lot of times there's even like a lot of emotional upheaval in the child. And she was a little more, she didn't crawl, you know, right away. She didn't, you know, walk right away. So I knew there was something. But that's another story too, as far as there's three signs of that. And I can, you know, we can talk about that. There's like a, you know, big denial. That's the, mm-hmm. That's the number one
right.
sign. The denial is for sure. Oh, my child's going to get better. I know they're going to get better. And that's how I felt. I know I can, you know, take her through all this and we're just going to make it, you know, out of this. And then you start to come to the realization that you have to get help. You have to go and you have to find out like from a doctor, from a, you know, somebody that can help you with this and talk your way through this. And that was a struggle too, because a lot of doctors do not understand special needs. They just kind of shove you to the side and just say, okay, you know, got to do this on your own. So yeah, I just, with her, that was a huge trial. That was a huge, trial for me. But again, I feel like God was doing something in my life. I just was letting him tell the story, letting it unravel, you know, letting it unfold. And, I just think with her, I just, you know, she's so remarkable. I mean, the things that she can do now, and that's why I want people to know there is hope in their child, you know, no matter what stage of autism or what stage of special needs. It's not just autism, any child on the spectrum, you know, there's so much hope for your child, they can do so much more. I mean, I can tell stories about our classroom. It's just the stories of them, we getting the children in this room and them doing nothing to them doing remarkable. I mean, it's just like God came in and said, okay, you know, I'm going to give this to them and their families.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have to like pause here, which is great because it's kind of a cliffhanger. And we're going to come back the second half next week. And what I really want to talk about, again, like some of the stories, but how that you begin to kind of acknowledge and begin to help your daughter and how that journey will help others too. So that was my friend, Jeannie Ouellette, and she's going to come back next week for part two. And you don't want to miss it. And if you have a friend with special needs, have them listen. Have them listen.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.